Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 5, Durvasa Muni's Life Spared, Text Number 6.
Navakshuna Bhakila Dharma Setave.
Navakshuna Bhakila Dharma Setave.
Ya Dharma Shula Sura Dharma Ketave.
Ya Dharma Shula Sura Dharma Ketave.
Trailokya Gopya Vishuddha Vartase.
Trailokya Gopya Vishuddha Vartase.
Mano Java Yabuddha Karmane Grine.
Mano Java Yabuddha Karmane Grine.
Namaha.
Namaha.
All respectful obeisances unto you.
Sunava.
Oh, you have an auspicious hub. Akila Dharma Setave. Whose spokes are considered to be a breach of the entire universe. He, indeed. Dharma Shila. Who are irreligious. Asura, for the demons. Dumahe Ketave, unto you who are like fire or an inauspicious comet. Trailokya, of the three material worlds. Gopaya, the maintainer. Vishuddha, transcendental. Vartase, whose effulgence. Mana Javaya, as speedy as the mind. Adbhuta, wonderful. Karmane, so active. Grine, I simply utter. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Odasudasan, Sudarshana, you have a very auspicious hub, and therefore you are the upholder of all religion. You are just like an inauspicious comet for the irreligious demons. Indeed, you are the maintainer of the three worlds. You are full of transcendental effulgence. You are as quick as the mind, and you are able to work wonders. I can simply utter the word Namaha, offering all obeisances unto you. Purport. The disc of the Lord is called Sudarshana, because he does not discriminate between high and low criminals or demons. Durvasa Muni was certainly a powerful brahmana, but his acts against the pure devotee Maharaj Amrisha were no better than the activities of asuras. As stated in the Shastras, Dharmam tu Sakshat Bhagavat Pranitam, the word dharma refers to the orders or laws given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarva Dharma Prajaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja. Real Dharma is surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, real Dharma means bhakti, or devotional service to the Lord. The Sudarshan Chakra is here addressed as Dharma Setave, the protector of Dharma. Maharaj Amrisha was a truly religious person, and consequently, for his protection, the Sudarshan Chakra was ready to punish even such a strict brahmana as Durvasa Muni, because he had acted like a demon. There are demons even in the form of brahmanas. Therefore, the Sudarshan Chakra does not discriminate between brahmana demons and shudra demons. Anyone against the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees is called a demon. In the Shastras, we find many Brahmanas and Kshatriyas who acted as demons and have been described as demons. According to the verdict of the Shastras, one has to be understood according to his symptoms. If one is born of a Brahmana father, but his symptoms are demoniac, he is regarded as a demon. The Sudarshan Chakra is always concerned with annihilating the demons. Therefore, he is described as Adharma, Shilasura, Duma, Ketave. Those who are not devotees are called Adharma Shila. The Sudarshan Chakra is just like an inauspicious comment for all such demons. So the translation again. Sudarshana, you have a very auspicious hub, and therefore you are the upholder of all religion. You are just like an inauspicious comet for the irreligious demons. Indeed, you are the maintainer of the three worlds. You are full of transcendental effulgence. You are as quick as the mind. You are able to work wonders. I can simply utter the word Namaha, offering all obeisances unto you. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Buddha Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Taramane. Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shnivadi Paskhyadhyade Sitarane. It may be surprising that person as powerful as Durvasa Muni, partial incarnation of Lord Shiva, could act in such a inauspicious way. After all, to become a Brahmana, and what to speak of a mystic Brahmana like Durvasa Muni, takes many lifetimes of austerities and cultivation of knowledge. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ye tamam prapadyante tam sthitaiva bhajamyaham mama vartanu vartante manusha partha sarvajaha. There is higher classes of people and there is lower classes of people depending upon surrender to Krishna. There is no other way of becoming high or low except by our relationship with Krishna. It may appear that our relationship is with many other people and our activities are apart from Krishna, but actually everyone is 100%, 24 hours a day, forever and ever, completely dependent upon Krishna. And as they surrender to Krishna, everyone gets into a different situation. Either Indra, yes, to Indra Gopam, Apahendra Mahos, Karma, Vandana Rupa, Bhajana Apnoti, Karmadi Kintu Bhakti Bhajam Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahang Vijami. From up to Indra, the King of Heaven, down to the Indra Gopa, the germ called Indra Gopa, which is about the size of a point, of a period in the center, in the sentence. All of them are simply according to their karma. Krishna is equal to everyone. As they surrender to Krishna, he awards them. Now how do we surrender to Krishna? Simply it's our choice. Now that choice in the human form of life is manifested according to who we hear from. Just like we've come here to hear about Krishna and his instructions. Now most people in Slovenia have not come to the temple today, as far as I know, because I wasn't here for 20 minutes unless they snuck in here for half an hour or something and left before I came back. But most people are not interested in hearing Krishna's instructions. But certainly they listen to so many instructions. They're watching how to play better sports, how to eat better, how to sleep better, have better sex, how to defend themselves better. Certainly they're interested in following instructions for increasing their materialistic life, but they're not very much interested in hearing about how to increase their spiritual life. And therefore their choices are rather limited. If we hear, for instance, just like imagine you go and see a movie, devotional movie, say Sita's Wedding. Did anyone ever see Sita's Wedding here? Well, it's a very beautiful movie about Sita and Ram, so I guess it's not a good example. Did anyone ever see Neelachal Mahaprabhu? Has anyone ever seen a devotional movie? Has anyone ever seen a karmi movie? I guess that's a better example. Say you go to the movies, and you really like the movie. It's exciting, it's entertaining, and it may be instructive. So, what are you going to remember the next day? That, what's that? Yeah, we'll remember the movie because it has a very big impact on our consciousness. So we wake up in the middle of the night screaming Avatar or something. Or Spider-Man, save me. That means it's so profound that it even enters into our dream life, our unconscious life. So what to speak of the unlimited association we've had, practically unlimited, since we were born with materialistic people? Is it any wonder that so many thoughts are flowing through our mind, which may not be 100% devotional? And therefore, if throughout the whole day so many non-devotional thoughts are flowing through one's mind, what is the opportunity to choose something devotional? Or even spiritual, or even moral. There's no alternative. So everything depends upon association, and that association is according to what people are interested in, what their actual interests are, and what they're trying to find out about. If you go to the bar, you'll certainly become educated on how to mix, what are the effects of different types of intoxication. People there are expert at the effects of different kinds of liquor. If you go there and ask them, can you please explain this verse of Bhagavad Gita, you're not very likely to get a very good explanation. So everything depends upon what we're hearing, and what we actually hear is depending upon our interests. Just like we can come to the class and we could not pay any attention because the class may not be talking about what we're interested in. Even if we talk about Krishna and how to become Krishna conscious, we think, well, that's pretty boring. Do you have something else that you'd like to explain to us? Well, Krishna was in the bushes with, wow, it sounds a little interesting now. And what happened next? Therefore, generally speaking, people like to hear stories, but they don't like to hear the punchline of the story. They don't like to hear the moral behind the story. But ultimately, the story is trying to explain is what actually the takeaway is, what we'll actually take away from anything we're doing, what the actual purpose of the story is. How we're going to apply it within our lives, what it actually means to us personally. So, someone like Durvasa Muni, he undoubtedly, I don't know his history, where he was born or whose parents were, how he got brought up, but undoubtedly he had an interest in becoming a powerful personality. And he was, at least in the Veda culture, where they explain, if you want to get this, you do this sacrifice, or you do this austerity, or you do this penance, or you hear from this person, and undoubtedly, after some lifetimes, perhaps, then he elevated himself from a Shudra to a Vaishya to a Kshatriya to a Brahmana. And then he went on. But all this has to do with surrender to Krishna. Hearing from the Brahmins, or hearing from the higher personalities in the Varnashram system about what you can do to elevate yourself from a Shudra to a Vaishya to a Kshatriya to a Brahmin. This requires hearing and practice, acceptation, and then practicing, putting into practice, and then getting the intelligence coming from Krishna how to accept higher and higher instructions. So he made it, as it says in the 11th canto, mystic powers are really not so mystical when you get down to it. Mystic powers are all according to one's identification with the Supersoul. That is, actually recognizing the Supersoul and following his instructions so that one becomes purified, so that one actually becomes in line with Krishna's desires. Just like Dhruva Maharaj, when he was meditating on Lord Vishnu in his heart, he became very powerful. He wasn't just reading the Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing about Vishnu and saying, okay, I accept. No, he was actually doing something practical, like only eating fruit that fell from the trees every 3 days, kapita fruit, only eating dry leaves that fell from the tree every 6 day, the second month, and the third month only drinking a little bit of water every 12th day, and the fourth month only taking one breath of air every 15 days. And then finally stopping breathing and standing on one leg. He just didn't chant Hare Krishna. He actually did something practical to focus his mind upon Krishna. Because that's the whole thing. The more we focus our minds upon Krishna, the more our desires will be fulfilled. Just like if you have a parent has a child and the child says, "Mom, I want to go out and play." "No, Mom, I want to go and eat something." "No, Mom, I want to watch television." "No, Mom, I want to go to sleep." The mother doesn't know what the child wants. But if the child says, "I want to eat, I want to eat, I want to eat," then the mother says, "Okay, we'll let you eat." So for the ordinary person who has hundreds of millions of desires, Krishna can't figure it out. He has so many desires, Krishna has to keep, a separate computer for him.
Yeah.
And mark down all the desires and plot out hundreds of millions of lives in the future to fulfill them all. But someone like Narasimha Muni, he says, "I want mystic power, I want to control the universe, I want to control the universe." And Krishna says, "Okay, stop eating, do this penance, hear from him, do this, that." And then he gets elevated to the platform that he becomes aware of the Supersoul in his heart, and therefore by such association he becomes empowered. Just like Dhruva Maharaj, when he was meditating on Vishnu and he stopped breathing, then the whole universe started to suffocate. So how is this possible? Now if we stop breathing, no one will even notice until we turn blue. But how is Dhruva Maharaj stopping breathing? Why was he so special? Because he was completely identified in consciousness, not just theoretically. He was actually conscious of Krishna. And therefore he became powerful like Krishna. Prabhupada gives the example, if you're trying to run, you can only run so many miles, kilometers an hour. But if you're in an airplane, even without any effort, then you can fly hundreds of kilometers an hour. If you're riding your bicycle, you can only go so fast, but if you grab hold of a train, then the train will pull you much faster without any effort. Similarly, when one actually is conscious of Krishna, then one becomes, as Krishna gives one the power that Krishna has by association. And therefore one can develop all kinds of mystic power because that's what one wants, and Krishna will reciprocate. Krishna is like a desire tree. He'll give us what we want and what we deserve. So if we surrender to Krishna enough to become conscious of Him, then He'll reciprocate and fulfill our desires. We may think we're independent, but as we can see, Dharasa Muni felt himself to be independent of Krishna, and but as soon as he wanted to misuse his mystic power, then he was cut down by the Sudarshan Chakra. Krishna would allow him to use his mystic power as Krishna desired, according to what he deserved, but not beyond that, especially to offend a Vaishnava. Therefore, although it appears that there's a system, well, there is a system to go from a Shudra to a Vaishya to a Kshatriya to a Brahmana to a devotee. But one, at any step of the way, we can become deviated and go into a lower class. We just don't notice it. Like sometimes we focus our attention and do something very sincere in devotional service, and Krishna reciprocates, and we're in ecstasy. And we think, now I've reached the goal of life, I'm a very special person, Krishna is recognizing. And then Maya says, well, why don't you take a break? You know, there's a nice movie on YouTube, why don't you just watch it? You know, you deserve it, you've done so much service. And then our consciousness goes down. How did this happen? Because we didn't listen to Krishna. We stopped listening to Him. We thought it's too much. So much devotional service, I need a break. And Maya breaks us. So this is the yoga chaliti manasa. As soon as one tries to make advance in devotional service, Maya will trick everyone. Maya is an equal opportunity employer. She is equal to everyone. She's ready to trick anyone. The karmis, the devotees, the yogis, everyone. She's ready to bring them down to the lowest platform by offering them something else other than advancement. Therefore, generally one starts in life as a Shudra. But by bad association, then Bhakti Bhaktivinoda Thakur says we become less than an animal. We become trained to be less than an animal. Like in modern civilization, everyone is born innocent, and they become less than an animal after some time. Like in Peru, there was a class of children, young children, they were called piranhas. You know what a piranha is? It's a little fish, big, big teeth, and they just devour whatever's in the water of the Amazon, and they turn into a skeleton in a few minutes. So these little children would go around, they were trained up 5 years old, whatever, 7 years old. They go around in the middle of the night in downtown Lima, and if they catch someone walking, they pounce on him. They take off everything except for his skin. They take that off too if they could pull it off. And everything he has, including his clothing, disappears. So that's modern education. Teaching children how to become piranhas. But if one is able to Shudra, if one is able to advance and become a Shudra, then if one hears from the wrong people, then instead of being a Shudra, then he becomes a Naradama. No, I'm sorry, a Mudha. A Shudra, he only hears about the glories of eating, sleeping, mating, defending. His school teaches him that, his parents teach him that, his friends teach him that, the magazines teach him that, the television teaches that, how to become a mudha. And one is somehow or another able to make and hear some good instruction, being born in the right family, or have the right circumstances, then one remains a Shudra and maybe advances towards, with good instructions, assisting a Vaishya, learns, becomes trained up as a Vaishya. But after becoming a Vaishya, and until some kind of knowledge about how the material world actually works, the value of clean air, pure water, good food, nice relationships, one does pious activities and becomes a Vaishya. But if one gets that position and then becomes misled, Like Sringi was born in a good family, but he was misled by his schoolmates and he became degraded. So then when, instead of being a Vaishya, one degrades himself into a Naradama. So most of the so-called civilized people in the modern world are all Naradamas. They have intelligence how to cheat the rest of the world. They print up pieces of paper and they actually convince people that these pieces of paper have some value and we can print as many as we like. And you have to eat them, these pieces of paper, because we're going to take all your food from you. So they're able to cheat people, and therefore they become Naradamas. So most of modern civilization, just a group of people, a few people cheating the rest of the people. Shudras. A whole bunch of Shudras, or less than Shudras, being cheated by the Naradamas. And one is able to advance and actually know the value of life and how to utilize resources in devotional service, one may advance to the platform of becoming dignasic, inquisitive about what the real goals of life are and how to achieve them. But if one misuses that position, then he becomes a maya pritigyana. He has the opportunity to gain real knowledge, but he gains knowledge how to cheat people, how to become God or something himself, how to lord it over others, how to win friends and influence people. And one is able to actually become actually jignasu and hear from the right persons and try to apply it within one's life, one may become a Brahmin, a Jnani, one who knows Brahman. Just like their Vasamuni, who was a Brahmana. But when one becomes envious of the Vaishnavas of Krishna, he doesn't become a Vaishnava or a devotee, he actually becomes a Asuram Bhavam Ashitya, a demon. So there's every opportunity in any stage, before we become an actual devotee, to fall down to a lower class. If we misuse our position for our sense gratification, or out of enviousness. Therefore, these examples are given here for our caution, just like the example of Bharat Maharaj falling down from the position of almost being on Bhava, so that we're cautious. We don't think, I'm a devotee, I'm going to the heavenly planets, I can do whatever I want, and I'm safe. So Maya will trick us like that. That's how she deluded so many. As Prabhupada said, women and wealth, these are the two allurements that have tricked so many stalwart devotees on the path of self-realization. So we think we're beyond being tricked because we're so exalted. That's the first way Maya tricks us. We don't need Krishna. Maya says, you don't need Krishna, all you need is me. And as soon as we accept that, then Maya will lead us down to the lowest level of existence. So just I'll read something from the Nectar, from the Shishu Upanishad. This is text number 9 in the Shishu Upanishad. In the language of the Bhagavad Gita 7.15, people who are engaged in gross sense gratification are muda, asses. The ass is a symbol of stupidity. Those who simply engage in the profitless pursuit of sense gratification are worshipping avidya, according to Shishu Upanishad. Those who play the role of helping this sort of civilization in the name of educational advancement are actually doing more harm than those who are on the platform of gross sense gratification. The advancement of learning by a godless people is as dangerous as a valuable jewel on the hood of a cobra. A cobra decorated with a valuable jewel is more dangerous than one not decorated. In the Hari Bhakti Shudodaya, the advancement of education by a godless people is compared to decorations on a dead body. In India, as in many other countries, some people follow the custom of leading a procession with a decorated dead body for the pleasure of the lamenting relatives. In the same way, modern civilization is a patchwork of activities meant to cover the perpetual miseries of material existence. All such activities are aimed towards sense gratification. But above the senses is the mind, and above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. The real name of real education should be self-realization, realization of the spiritual values of the soul. Any education which does not lead to such realization must be considered avidya, or nescience. And to culture such nescience means to go down to the darkest regions of existence. So then Prabhupada goes on to say that such education is compared to the putting a jewel, just like Prabhupada says, a cobra decorated with a valuable jewel is more dangerous than one not decorated. So we shouldn't be so much enamored just because someone knows something. The real thing is, what is their actual attitude towards Krishna and his devotees? We may be very learned and can quote so much scripture. We may have so much followers and this and that. But if our aim is simply to decry Krishna and his devotees, ultimately to take their place, then such valuable education is actually just like the valuable jewel on the head of a serpent. Won't be very helpful. Conclusion is, we should try to become humble devotees, not think ourselves to be great personalities. And whatever we can do, we should see ourselves as instruments for Krishna, rather than independent actors in this material world accomplishing so many wonderful things, because we ourselves are wonderful. We should understand that Krishna is wonderful and Krishna's devotees are wonderful. Whatever we can do in their service, that's wonderful because they're wonderful, not because we're wonderful. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Hi Krishna, thank you for the lecture. I would like to ask you, because sometimes you quote Srila Prabhupada or Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita about quotation. How do you choose when and how do you put this quotation? Thank you.
You mean when I quote Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam or other things? How do I do it?
Yeah.
Well, the Krishna tells it for me.
Before or...
Well, this one I actually looked up. I mean, when I read the verse, then I ask Krishna, can you tell me some verses that are in relationship to this that I can I utilize? And then Krishna, if he wants, he tells me. From him comes remembrance. So.
Can I ask another question?
Yeah.
Can I ask devotees, they were preaching and explaining this verse, Bhagavad Gita, we are not the doer. So how to explain that when we offend someone, I mean, in a certain way, we are the doer, but, you know, we give the...
We're not the doer.
Yeah.
But we're doing something. We're not the only doer, according to Bhagavad Gita. In the 18th chapter, in the... Krishna says, Adishtanam tata karta karanam cha pritagvidam. That there are five factors in the accomplishment of any kind of work, beginning with Adishtanam, which means the place of action, namely the body that we're in. Tata karta, karta means the doer, that's ourselves. Adishtanam tata karta karanam, the senses that we're working with. Pritagveda, daivam chaivat prapanchimam. And ultimately, the super soul and the false ego in contact with the material energy, or the soul in contact with the false ego. So these are the five factors. So one of them is called karta. So we're the karta, but the thing that we're doing is we're desiring. Just like you may press a button on a big machine that makes cars. But you're not personally making the card, you're just pressing the button. So we desire, and then Krishna fulfills that desire through his energies, either spiritual or material. So we're not the only doer. But unless we desire, unless we deserve, then Krishna's not going to do anything.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes? Oh, we need a microphone. We need a runner for the microphone.
Thank you for your lecture. I have a question: how to include our nature if it is not accepted from people who leading or what you? It's not accepted anything what you want to do. So what?
Well, it depends what you want to do and who you're trying to, who you're asking. You know, it depends what you're trying to do. I don't know. Certain things are acceptable. There's things to be done in the Pravitim Jhana, Ritim Jhana, Jhana, Navidor, Asura. Nisocham Nakpichachara, Nisatim Teshu Vijite. There are things to be done and there are things not to be done. So it's not that everything is acceptable. So we have to, and things that are acceptable to one class of people may not be acceptable to another class of people. So it depends what you're talking about. If you say, my nature is that, you know, I don't know. You know, I'm a pickpocket. Should I like to utilize that in devotional service? Is that all right? I'll give half to the temple. So that may be an extreme example, but you know, among certain people, you know, there's it's acceptable, it's honorable to be a pickpocket. In fact, they get trained. Their whole family is it's a family business. But it may not be acceptable to another class of people who were born in a police family. So it depends. There may be things that are reasonable that we want to do that are not acceptable in certain situations. It's not that they may not be reasonable and doable, but may not be applicable to that group of people you're trying to deal with. But there are so many things to do with devotional service. It's not that we're told we can't breathe, we can't eat, we can't do anything. No, we're given opportunities for service. But they should be in line with what's actually service is, what's needed. Does that answer your question? Without going into what you're talking about, do you want to tell us what you're being restrained from doing?
Let's say if we want to distribute prasadam or more quantity, or to do something for rebuilding this temple, and this is not accepted from some person.
Oh, just talk to Mukunda, he'll get you engaged. You know Mukunda?
Madhava?
No, Mukunda. He's in charge of, he deals with food for life. If you want to distribute prasadam, there's devotees who are engaged in these things. As far as helping the temple, depends. I don't know that you have to talk to the authorities. I think everyone wants to. No one's going to object to getting a bigger temple with more devotees. I don't think anyone's interested in making the temple smaller. And that, you know, those everyone is appreciative, but it may have to take some planning, and it may happen in a systematic way. Anything else? Yes.
Bhakti Yoga Tilburg asking. The word demon is quite heavy and completely opposite of devotee. It seems to bring a division between the good and bad people. How to go about this?
Yes, well, you got it correct. That's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Dvavimo purusholoke. Actually, dvavimo putasargesmin. Asra eva cha. Actually, I forget the. Dvabhuta sarge eva cha. Daivam asram eva cha. Daiva visra sakprota asram partha meshino. I've explained to you the divine qualities, of which there are many, but now I'm going to tell you about the demons. And the demons are very simple. Unfortunately, everyone, practically 99.9% of the people, fit into that category nowadays. They don't accept Krishna, they don't accept God in reality, they don't accept scripture. So therefore they're considered demons. Doesn't mean they have two horns growing out of the head or tail. It means simply they don't accept God and His instructions. And they don't accept, that's it. That makes them asuras. And there are others who are godly. They accept Krishna, they accept God, and they accept his instructions. That's all. And if we don't like it, I didn't make it up. You got to complain to Krishna. That's his. That's what. And then we can see what the results are. We think, well, there's so many nice people in Maya civilization, despite of the fact that they don't accept Krishna, and they don't accept the Shastra, and they do all kinds of sinful activities, but we don't want to disturb them and criticize them because we're so liberal. Since we don't understand how the material nature works, we're not in control of the material nature. Material nature doesn't say, oh, here's a cow killer, but he's a nice person. He treats his children nicely. So I'm not going to give him any reaction. But that's not how the material nature works. And we say, well, he's a spiritual cow killer. It doesn't fit. Anything else?
Yes. Next question is, in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.6.6, Vishwanath writes, give me permission to leave my body, having concentrated my mind free of desires and impressions. Question, how one can know if one is free from impressions?
From what?
From impressions.
Impressions?
Yes.
One is always thinking about Krishna. It sees everyone and everything in relation to Krishna. Sarabhutistamatmanam sarabhutini chatmini ikshate yoga yukdatma saratra samadarshana yo yomam pashati saratra sarvam chamai pashati tasyaham na pranashami sachame na pranashati. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized soul sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. And for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. And every other vision except for that is called material. So how to do that? Chant Hare Krishna. Hear about Krishna. Give up our misconceptions about what's going on. Okay.
And one more?
Yeah.
Vaishnava, Srimad Bhagavatam 12.9.41 writes, one who takes shelter of your lotus feet can never be touched by the contamination of material work, material qualities, or time. Question, this don't really happen in reality much.
Not much. Very rarely does anyone take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. That's the problem. That's okay. Khala, Grandarai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.